Bonjour à tous. Alors, ce podcast est un peu particulier parce qu'il est en anglais. Vous êtes sur la version en version originale, mais il existe également une version en français que j'ai enregistrée avec mon ami comédien Vincent Paco. Bonjour Vincent.
Bonjour.
Que vous pouvez retrouver sur toutes vos plateformes de podcast habituelles.
Allez, Vlan, c'est parti. Bonjour, je suis Grégory Pouy et vous écoutez Vlan. Vlan, ce sont des partages d'expériences concrets, sans bullshit, pour mieux comprendre comment la société évolue. Bienvenue sur Vlan et n'hésitez pas à vous abonner.
So, hi everyone. I'm with Mo Godot, who is the chief marketing officer, business officer actually, of Google X. And you launch yourself in a mission which is transforming people into happiness, like having 1 billion people happy. So it's very funny because I'm a marketer, you're a marketer, it's a marketing podcast, and we're going to talk about happiness, which is kind of the, sometimes for some people, and maybe you, I'd like to have your point of view, is the opposite of happiness. what is your point of view on marketing and AI and all these innovations, and do you know if it has an impact, the smartphones, on happiness?
To start with, marketers are people, right?
True.
So I tend to believe that everyone listening to us today wants to be happy.
True.
And, you know, wanting to be happy is a very innate human desire. We all that we do, all the success that we strive to achieve, all the relationships we build, all the things we acquire, at the end of the day, it's an attempt to find happiness. And so I hope that by the end of the podcast, I will help everyone find happiness a little easier in life. Marketing, I have to say, of course, depends on the message of marketing, on the product that we're marketing, and honestly, on the approach that we use to market products. Mostly in the modern world leads to unhappiness. I'm sorry to tell you that. I apologize, guys, but it's the truth. I mean, the idea of the basic idea of marketing contradicts the very, very basic premise that I have in my book, Solve for Happy. So the idea is, if you look at an equation that describes happiness, your happiness is equal to or greater than a difference between the events of your life and your expectations of how life should behave. If you actually look at every moment in your life where you ever felt unhappy, it was a moment where life didn't give you exactly what you wanted. Okay? You know, and it's actually easy to understand this. You know, does rain make you happy or unhappy? You know, if you ask this to anybody, they'll say it depends.
Totally.
Right? It depends on if I wanted to sunbathe and sit out in the sun and tan, rain will make me very unhappy. If I wanted to water my plants, rain will make me happy, right? It is a comparison between the event itself, rain, and how I want life to be. Now, marketing systematically makes us feel that what we have is not good enough, right? It is creating that constant expectation that I could be better in life if I have a red car instead of a blue car, if I have an iPhone 10 instead of an iPhone 7, if I have, you know, what my neighbor has, if I, and so on. And so that constant approach to trying to make people feel that they're missing out on something, unfortunately, leads to unhappiness.
And actually, you make a difference between success, which is very much, marketing is usually selling success, happiness, joy, and pleasure.
Of course.
So what are the differences?
To start with, you know, when I was trying to define happiness and trying to find an equation for it, I realized that we have a very blurry definition of the concept of happiness. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, if you look at the equation I just described, events minus expectations, in that definition, happiness would be that peaceful feeling, that contentment we feel inside us when we're okay with life as it is, right? So you feel happy with your partner if, you know, you can never be with a partner that's all amazing. Everyone will have something that you may not like, but you look at your partner as a whole and say, okay, I'm okay with this. I don't want to change this. I like being with this person with their upsides and downsides, mm-hmm. right? This is happiness. It's that peaceful contentment of I don't want to change anything. I'm happy with life as it is. Above happiness, surprisingly, in that definition, you cannot be happier. You can be happy more often. So I define a category that I call joy, a state in which you're happy most of the time. I'm sure you know a few people who, if it rains, they're happy. If it's sunshine, they're happy. And if it's snow, they're happy. Everything that happens in their life, they seem to be joyful and jumping up and down, right? Those kinds of people are in a state that I call the state of joy. They're not happier. They're happy most of the time. Below that state are states of unhappiness and states that I call the state of escape. Let's talk about unhappiness first, right? You know, the state of unhappiness is the opposite of the state of happiness. It's when your brain solves the happiness equation, compares an event to an expectation, and then realizes that this situation in life is not exactly how it wants life to be. So what your brain does then to alert you that life is sort of not safe, not exactly what you want, it gives you an emotion. That emotion could be worry, it could be fear, it could be sadness, or, you know, and those negative emotions are what we equate with unhappiness, right? That state is a temporary state that happens every time you do that thought, right? And in a very interesting way, that state is a state that actually is a survival mechanism. I don't know if people realize that, but unhappiness is a very simple survival mechanism of your brain telling you, change something because I don't like the world as it is. Okay? Below that is a state that I call the state of confusion, which are the people that are unhappy all the time. You know, those guys that are happy all the time, if it snows, they go, let's go skiing. If it's sunshine, they say, let's sit on, you know, in the sun. The guys that are unhappy all the time in the state of confusion, if it snows, they say it's too cold. If it's, you know, sunshine, they say it's too hot, right? Mm-hmm. They look for what's wrong with everything in life and they're unhappy all the time. In the middle is the most interesting illusion created by the modern world around happiness. It's a state that I call the state of escape. It's pleasure. Pleasure is not happiness. Pleasure is an escape that we go to when we're unable to find happiness. So you go through a tough week, you know, work is not going great. What do? You go over the weekend, you go to a party, you have a couple of drinks, you jump up and down and you dance. And what happens is when you do that, your brain stops thinking about the reasons that are making you unhappy. And the absence of unhappiness, in the absence of thoughts, without the thoughts, you feel happy. You think that you feel happy. Mm-hmm. But the problem is you wake up the next morning
and it's worse,
right? You wake up the next morning and you start thinking again about the things that made you unhappy and you go back to them. So this is one very important definition in Solve for Happy. The other interesting definition is the promise that our parents told us, that our teachers told us, that everyone when we were growing up told us, which is you have to be successful first. Mm-hmm. And when you achieve success, hopefully then you can find happiness. I mean, honestly, how often do you see that to be true, right? How many people do you know that are swimming in money, famous, successful, and miserable, right?
People don't know that, though. They believe that, I mean, I think there's a strong belief that success is happiness. So when I'll have millions, that when I have this car, when I have this girlfriend or this boyfriend, or when I have whatever, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
They're very much into that.
So in Solve for Happy, I try to show the truth in one of two ways. One is through statistics, right? And the other is through actual personal experience. I want you to ask yourself as a listener, how often did you tell yourself that? When I get that promotion, I'll be happy. When I become, the boyfriend or the girlfriend of that girl, I'll be happy, right? And then you eventually end up saying, oh, I got there, but I want something else. Mm-hmm. I'll share with you a personal story. Please don't judge me. I was a different person then. But, you know, as my success started in life, I went into the BMW showroom. I bought a beautiful BMW 520. Right. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it was a really incredible dream for me to have a BMW 520. I kid you not. As I was driving out of the showroom, someone drove in front of me in a BMW 730. Right. And literally in that 1 second, I raised my hand from admiring the beautiful piece of machinery that I bought to ask myself, when will you get the 7 Series? Right. We all constantly strive for more and success doesn't happen. Statistics will prove that too. Scientific research will show you that your happiness will grow along the growth of your income until you reach the average income of the country you live in. Really interesting, huh? Mm-hmm. If you don't have enough to live, if you don't have to put enough to put food on the table or to pay the rent, it's hard to be happy.
It's different.
Right? Yeah. The minute you reach the average income of the country you're in, it starts to plateau. The more money that you make doesn't make you happier. The more success that you create doesn't make you happier. You know, as a matter of fact, there are people who will tell you the more money that you make beyond a certain point starts to make you unhappier. You start to worry about it. You start to get treated differently by people. You start to realize the truth. You know, at a certain stage in my life, I had so much success and wealth, and I was miserable. And so every time I purchased something, I got even more miserable because it didn't make me happy. I would go out there and buy a fancy car. I feel happy for 25 seconds. Mm-hmm. And then the minute I start driving, all cars are the same when you're focused on the road, right?
Exactly.
And suddenly you start to ask yourself, oh man, I've just paid 50 to, you know, or 100,000 euros and it made me happy for 20 seconds. Like, when is this going to end? I'm unhappy again, and pouring money on it doesn't make you happy at all.
I think the success is very connected to, so you have, you split your books in illusion, blind spot, and truth. And success is very connected to one of the illusion, which is the ego, the illusion of self, I guess.
Yes.
So the illusion, we can go through quite quickly between the source, the illusion of self, the knowledge, time, control, and fear. But what I thought was interesting, and you mentioned it just before, were the blind spot. And the blind spot, as you explain it in your book, is these tendencies to survive. And so as a species, what we try to do is to survive, not to be happy. Mm. And what you say is that we need to debug our brain. So I want to ask you, how do you do that? How do you debug your brain?
How do you make your body stronger? You know the answer to that. Everyone listening to us understands that if you prioritize your fitness, if you eat healthy, and if you go to the gym 4 to 5 times a week, you'll be fit, right?
Mm-hmm.
The reason you're not fit, if you're not, is not because this is not true. It's just because you're not doing it, mm-hmm. right? Similarly with happiness, huh? There are certain practices that if you practice 4 to 5 times a week, or if you learn them and really, really invest the time to live as per their guidance, you will be happy. You have to prioritize your happiness and you have to do certain things differently. Now, most people, and you know, I don't know why today is the conversation is all about cars, but I'll give you another example from cars.
I don't have one.
I used to be a car lover at a point in time. Right. I had a wonderful Saab convertible, and I don't know why, but we car fanatics, we just loved Saabs, right? They were ugly like a shoe. I mean, like the ugliest car ever, but we just loved them, right? And I had that car, twin turbo convertible, and you know, it had very low mileage on it, and so I loved it. My wife at the time took it out and had an accident. Right, she ran head on into a truck. Okay,
wow. Is she safe?
She was safe.
Okay,
right. So that was really interesting. The way my brain thought about the event is, it said, "My car, my beautiful car, the one that I love, is crushed completely, mm-hmm. but my wife is safe. This event meets my expectations. I'm happy."
Okay.
Interesting. And then I started to ask myself, what if she had parked the car on the side, went into a convenience store to buy a bottle of water, right? And then when she was inside the store, a truck hit the car head on and the car would have been crushed.
Mm-hmm.
The event would be exactly the same. You know, the car is crushed. My wife is safe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what would my reaction be? I would be miserable. I would start to tell myself, who's this idiot driver? Why did she park it here? I love this car. I lost this car.
Mm-hmm.
The event is the same, but the way we think about it is what makes us happy or unhappy. Now, if you think about that, you realize that every moment in your life that you ever felt unhappy was not a result only of what life gave you. It was more a result of the way you thought about what life gave you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The reason we're so unhappy in a world where the quality of life is so much better, where our life expectancy is so much better, where we have all of those luxuries of life today, is not because life is not kind to us. It's because we think about life the wrong way. We look at life through the lens of illusions, things that we think are true but actually are not at all, and through the features in our brain that are designed to make things look worse than they are. So your brain is not designed to make you happy. Let's just be very clear about that, right? Your brain is designed to make you alive. It's a survival mechanism. So if a tiger shows up, you know, remember the caveman years? If a tiger shows up, even though it's a beautiful animal with beautiful muscle tone and patterns and so on, your brain has no interest whatsoever to say, oh, wow, look how beautiful this tiger is, right? Your brain has one interest only to say, we're going to die, right? Let's run away. And for that, there are features in your brain that will filter out the beauty of the animal. It will just focus on the teeth. There are features in your brain that will assume that this animal is hungry, angry, and wants to kill you. There are features in your brain that will exaggerate the threat so that you run away, right? So those seven features, as I call them, seven blind spots, are designs in our brain, features that make life look worse than it really is, okay? And, you know, I always give an example that may appear funny, but it's not at all. The next time you are stuck out there in the rain and complaining that it rains often in Paris, remember that it's raining bombs in Syria. Okay? If you want the whole truth and to see how the reality of how bad your life is, see the whole truth. And the whole truth is water is a lot better than bombs. It could have been much worse. But we don't think about it that way. Our brains are just designed to say, in comparison to a day that is sunny, rain is bad. Okay? And those features are making us unhappy, as I call it, unnecessarily unhappy. Right? There is absolutely no reason most of the time for our unhappiness. It's just the way we see life and the way we process it through the blind spots.
So the blind part, the filter, you talked about it a little bit. So yeah. We see negative instead of positive.
So we filter. So the blind spots, the seven of them, the first of them is filtering.
Yeah.
And filtering is that you actually see a tiny fraction of the truth. Mm-hmm. Right? In reality, if you look at the room around you right now, and just take a moment to focus on all the detail that you've been missing, you will realize that what you grasped from the room you're sitting in was much less than what you actually filtered out. The reason we filter out is because our brains have limited capacity. As amazing as they are, they cannot process all of the information that is given to them. Mm-hmm. So they have to filter out some information to be able to process the rest, right? And what do they filter out? They filter out the good news. They just keep the bad news because these are the important bad elements that they can act on.
You want to survive.
Yeah, exactly. They can act on to make you survive. Then, if this was not bad enough, that second feature is they assume. Mm-hmm. So after they filter out 99% of the truth, they go like, that's not enough to make a decision. So I need to complete the picture so I can make a decision. So they assume things. They assume things that are not true at all. You know, your boyfriend can come from work on Friday feeling stressed from the work day. So you say, hi, I love you. He doesn't respond properly. And you start to assume everything. It's like, you know, he doesn't love me anymore. He must have been with another woman. He's cheating on me. You make a million assumptions because your brain is saying, hey, something's wrong here. Let's do something about it. And none of them are necessarily true until we know that they are true. Then they do the biggest assumption of all, which is to assume the future. Our brains are amazing at making stories as if it's the oracle itself. It knows the future. It's like your boss is going to fire you. How do you know that? All that you really know is that your boss told you that you need to improve your performance, for example, or that your boss doesn't seem to be appreciating your work or whatever that is. That's the truth. But the assumption of your brain saying, oh, by the way, he's going to fire you, is actually totally not the truth at all. Mm-hmm. And it's a very negative story most of the time. Somehow we have an ability to forecast doomsdays every single day of our life, while the reality is that our scenarios never come true. Mm-mm. Then they look at the past, which is really interesting. So most of the reference points of your brain come from the past, from an experience that happened 7 days before, even though, by the way, they don't know exactly how it happened. They think it happened in a certain way, and they use that as a reference for how to compare events and say, look, if it failed last week, it's going to fail again today. Or if it failed last week, that's because I'm a failure. Right? Yeah. And the features continue. I think my favorite of them is exaggeration. Labeling, for example, is a very interesting one. Labeling was my biggest blind spot. As an executive, I had very little time to make decisions. So I had to label everything. This is an idiot. This is a good man. This is a very interesting marketeer. She is going to do a great job. He's going to do a bad job. Mm-hmm. And I label everything. I judge everything to make snap decisions. Right? But when we label, we lose context, because I remember vividly one of my country managers when I was at Google gave me a very bad business plan, right? And so I pushed him back and I said, I'm sorry, this doesn't work. You seem not to know what you're doing. Can you please go back and do this again? The next time he came, I had already labeled him in my brain as, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. Mm. Right. So he sat to talk about his business plan. I was dismissive. I didn't want to hear. And literally, I'll tell you, 6 minutes into the presentation, I told him, I'm really sorry. Would you please give me some time? I'll just go out for 2 minutes and come back, because I am not making a sound choice now. OK. And I literally went out and I said to my brain, look at the content he's presenting and assume that you never met him before. Uh-huh. And it was the best business plan offered to me in the entire history of my time at Google. When I removed the label, I saw the truth. And then there is exaggeration, right? I always make fun of how, a mother would go to her husband and say, your daughter has been sick all winter. I mean, she caught the flu twice, right? That's definitely not all winter. But to a mother, this is an alarming signal that requires immediate action. And so for that, she would exaggerate. The brain would exaggerate and say, no. If I tell you that it was 6 days of the year, you would not take the right action. I need to tell you all winter so that you actually panic and take action. There is one more blind spot. I don't remember what it is.
Emotion.
Emotions. Oh my God, that's the big one. Emotions are actually a very interesting part of how our brains make us take action. So there is a big difference between thinking logically and saying, oh, there is a tiger around 4 meters to the left. I might as well start moving to the right. Mm-hmm. And there is a panic emotion. Emotions flood our systems with chemicals, right? Whether it's adrenaline, whether it's oxytocins, whether it's, right? And those kinds of emotions are really what makes us superhumans. Right? They make us fall in love irrationally. Mm-hmm. They make us run away like crazy. They make us jump in one big jump and cut the throat of a tiger, right? And so your brain uses emotions to survive. But it's when emotions get out of control that really, really, really we miss the truth, right? And actually most of the people, because Solve for Happy is a very logical book, people will ask me and say, so shouldn't we acknowledge our emotions? As a matter of fact, I talk about this very clearly. I even have a chapter that's called Love is All You Need, right? Yeah. But the idea is acknowledging your emotions is very different than acknowledging and accepting irrational emotions. So the emotion is a trigger for you to take an action. After you acknowledge the emotion and even embrace it, what action would you take to get yourself to succeed and be happy at the same time?
Wow.
That was a long conversation.
No, but that's amazing. I mean, I know it's supposed to be 20 minutes. I don't know where we are right now, but well, way above. But still,
maybe
I'm interested.
We can do too.
But still, I'm interested. So whatever. You have then 5 truths, which I guess are the answers to those 7 blind spots. These are somehow the triggers to debug your brain, or
in the very last sentence of Solve for Happy, I say, find the truth. This is where happiness is, right? Truly, most of the time, the reasons for our unhappiness. I mean, of course, some of us go through some very tough times. We lose a child, or we're sick, and I did, right? Mm. But it's for most of us on our normal day-to-day life, you know, an annoying boss or a little bit of a traffic jam or, you know, problems with your relationship. These are not real reasons for unhappiness. Now, finding the truth is a very interesting way to navigate life. I'll give you an example. Change is real. Change is actually the truth of life. As a matter of fact, if you look at the very basic laws of physics, entropy is what manages our universe. Entropy is the tendency for the universe to decay and break down, right? Now, from a chaos theory point of view, it's a very simple mathematical equation, but it's the absolute truth, right? Now, if you understand that, change doesn't bother you anymore, right? I mean, I give a simple example and I say, everyone listening to us today understands that if you put the North Pole and the South Pole of magnets in front of each other, they will attract, right? Has that ever upset you? I mean, did you ever look at that and say, ugh, life is so unfair? Even if your finger is stuck between them and it hurts, you're not going to say, life is unfair to me, I'm going to sit down and complain for a week. You're just going to say, hey, you know, opposite poles of magnets attract. This is a universal physics law.
Learning.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And so when you find the truth and you tell yourself the truth is things will change. My boss will change at work. You know, my job may change. My partner may grow older or find something that changes in their life. The change is the truth. If you acknowledge that, it doesn't upset you anymore.
True.
You deal with it like you deal with the opposite poles of magnets attracting. You say, it's something that I expect. I should be prepared for it. I should react to it, and I should take it into consideration going forward. I define 5 truths.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, one of the illusions I talk about is the illusion of knowledge. So I actually don't know what the truth is. And I say very openly that these are my 5 truths. Your 5 truths would be different.
Maybe, okay? But what I loved were the love one.
Yeah.
Because as you said, I mean, a lot of people, and especially you mentioned women that don't love themselves or don't love their body, especially. And you split love between gratitude, self-love, and being kind to others.
Yeah.
Which I think being kind to others is very connected to happiness.
Absolutely.
So it would be interesting to deep dive into that. Maybe not, because the 5 truths are basically now is real, what you just explained, awareness, the change that you mentioned also, the love and the death as a truth, because we're all going to die.
Mm-hmm.
But I was very interesting to deep dive a little, even though we are out of time. It's just a podcast, so... We can do half of time, it doesn't matter. On the love one.
Yeah. So the chapter about love was my, as I call it, even I write there and I say it's my unscientific chapter because there is very, very little science and research done on the topic of love. As a matter of fact, I've been researching for a future book, the topic of love, very heavily. And it's actually really, really rare to find any research on it. I differentiate very clearly between love as portrayed by the movies and the music industry and real love. Real love is unconditional love. And the difference between them is, you know, conditional love is really the result of an equation, right? So, you know, you're helping me spread my message of happiness across France, and for that, I love you, which basically it means that if you stop doing that, I would stop loving you. And truly, this is the basis of the material world that we live in.
True.
You know, I love my partner if she's pretty. If she's not pretty, I don't. I love this person because he makes me laugh. If he doesn't, I don't, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is not love. This is material love. This is conditional love. The real love is unconditional love. Unconditional love is, I love you, and that's it. Right? You know, you may be nice to me today and not so nice tomorrow and then nice again after tomorrow. I may disagree with you in the process, but I love you nonetheless. Right? And that is an understanding that we missed in the modern materialistic world. Now, the beauty of that unconditional love is that you feel the joy of it in giving it, not taking it.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, wanting to be loved is a form of ego. And we didn't have time to speak about the illusion of ego, but truly, it's you know, it's I am worthy of being loved. This is a recognition of my identity. That is not love either. True love is, I love butterflies, right? Whatever they do, wherever they are, if they come my way, if they don't come my way, if they're beautiful or just pale gray, I just love butterflies. I just love them. This is how it is, right? Mm-hmm. I love my son, whether he's alive or dead, whether he is, you know, he was nice to me or not. He was always nice to me, right? But that's that concept of unconditional love is really, really something that is the only emotion that is not generated in the form of thought. Okay, and accordingly, it's the only emotion that will always keep your happiness equation correct because it's not a thought, right? Now, the biggest, I always say that the second biggest reason for unhappiness in the modern world today is ego. Marketers, please pay attention to that, right? And I really think we should talk about positive marketing and marketing for good, not marketing for just gain, but mm-hmm. we'll talk about that later. The biggest reason for unhappiness in the modern world today is lack of self-love. How harsh we are to ourselves, right? How the modern world convinced us that we have to comply to a certain image, to a certain performance, to a certain success level, to a certain, you know, so many things. It's like the shape of your body matters and the number of likes you get on Facebook matters. And we're constantly torturing ourselves saying you're not good enough, you're not good enough, you're not good enough. You're more than good enough. And by the way, you're all that you will ever get. Even if you, you know, torture yourself for the rest of your life, this is you. Love it. You know, ask yourself next time you're harsh to yourself, next time your brain says, I hate you, ask yourself if you would treat a friend that way, if you even would treat an enemy that way. We treat ourselves much worse True. Than we treat anyone else. Fix that, and suddenly something amazing happens. You love you unconditionally, the rest of the world will love you unconditionally. And then you love you unconditionally, and you love the rest of the world back. And when you do that, you start to do the one thing that is the absolute top cure for unhappiness, which is to give, to make others happy, which is at the core of my 1 billion happy mission. Mm-hmm. My 1 billion happy mission is really three simple steps. I'm reaching out, you know, I'm actually leaving Google. I don't know if we said that or not, but I'm leaving Google to focus the rest of my life, the rest of my resources, my contacts, everything I have learned in the last years of my life to get a message of happiness to a billion people, right? This message requires only three simple steps. Step number one is for you to rebel against the modern world and say, I don't accept this anymore. I want to be happy, okay? All I want is not another iPhone, because honestly, 10 is not much better than 8, right? No. right? And I don't want another Android phone just so that people know I'm not biased, right? I don't want to be successful. I don't want to be perceived as famous. I don't want all of the promises they gave me. I want to be happy first, and then we'll see about the rest, right? If you want to be happy, step number two is prioritize your happiness. How many of us show up at the gym 5 times a week to take care of our body? Show up at the happiness gym 5 times a week. Listen to a video, listen to a podcast, talk to a friend, read a book, or even just spend time with people that make you happy, right? If you do the work, you're more likely to be happy. And then three, which is really the core, is find the compassion in your heart to spread that message forward, to tell others about what you learn, to tell others about your intention to turn your life to be a happier life. Right? If you do that and tell two people who will tell two people who will tell two people, I promise you, that is the design of the exponential curve, and we will reach all of France in 2.5 years. Right? If we start from the 10,000 people that listen to this podcast and ask each of them to tell two people who tell two people, in 2.5 years, all of France will get the message. Right? If we do that and continue in 5 years, we will have 1 billion happier people on the planet. How much different do you think life will be then?
That would be amazing.
It would be amazing. It would be what this is all about.
And I have a last question. I didn't prepare you for that one, so you can think about it, but
I guess you already have the answer. No. This podcast is called Vlan, which is an onomatopoeia, which means slam the door, basically.
So okay.
I would like to know, what would you slam the door to, or who you slam the door to?
Hmm. I would slam the door to the lies of the modern world. I rebel. I tell you that, hands down. I'll tell you, I have not watched a single violent movie in the last 11 years, right? Wow. I think it's about time we say no. I'm asking everyone here, huh? We watch movies where someone points a gun at someone else's head and pulls the trigger, and it doesn't move our hearts. How is that possible? How do we agree with that, right? Now, of course, we've been conditioned to accept this. We've been conditioned to accept that we can have violence, hate, greed, competitiveness as the value system of our life. And then we wonder when some guy, who's been misled by a terrorist organization or a religious extreme view or whatever, shows up and kills us. We're telling everyone that violence is okay, and the weaker of us, the more stupid of us, the more deceived of us, believe it. Now, can you change that? No. I can tell you hands down, you don't have the power in you to go to Hollywood today and say, stop doing this, right? But you can stop watching it. And if you stop watching it and I stop watching it, Hollywood will produce more comedies, right? Sure. That is a duty that we have in us. I rebelled. I rebelled a long time ago, and I'm actually asking the whole world to stop this. Tell every supplier that supplies something into your life that what you want is to be happy. I don't want a more fancy phone that I can brag about to my friends. I want a phone that respects my privacy and gives me a more organized way of reaching information, tells me how often I am bending down and just liking food on Facebook, and makes my life happier. If you say that, and I say that, and all of us say that, the next phone that will come out will fulfill our happiness. If we say we don't want violence, the next movie that will come out will be comedy. If we say we don't want horrible news all the time, where they show me graphic pictures of the violence of the world, the next reporting news will be more objective, right? It's up to you and I. We live in a world where when the crowds got together, there was the Arab Spring. When the crowds got together, there was the election of Donald Trump. The power is entirely in the hands of the crowds. And you're one of the crowds. You are as much a leader as the president of France in terms of your own life. Right? You need to be that president of your own life. I am not going to continue to live the lie of the modern world. And if I do that, I will have the compassion in me to tell four people around me, the people I really love, my sister, my brother, my daughter, whoever. And then I will tell my close friends, and then I will tell my department at work. And maybe that continues to grow. It becomes my company. It becomes my country. Right? But each of us needs to start there and say, that's it. I slam the door in the face of the lies of the modern world.
Wow, that was amazing, Mo. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Thanks a lot.
Merci d'avoir écouté Vlan. Si vous avez aimé l'émission, vous pouvez le dire avec des étoiles, 5 de préférence sur iTunes, et le partager avec vos amis ou vos collègues. Je suis Grégory Pouy. Vous pouvez me retrouver sur Twitter et LinkedIn sous le pseudo Greg from Paris. N'hésitez pas à me remonter vos remarques, vos questions, mais aussi les invités que vous aimeriez entendre.